Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the September 19th meeting of the Ferndale City Council. Rise with me for the salute of our flag, and Councilmember Bursch will lead us tonight.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and please be seated. Our city clerk, Susan Duncan, will now conduct the roll call.
Councilmember Czar.
Here.
Councilmember Hanson.
Here.
Councilmember Olson.
Here.
Councilmember Taylor.
Here.
Councilmember Watson.
Present.
Councilmember Bursch.
Here.
And Councilmember Goodrich has requested an excused absent. He's on the high seas somewhere, I'm assuming with his lovely wife. So is there a motion to excuse Councilmember?
So moved.
Goodrich.
Second.
So moved and seconded to excuse Councilmember Goodrich. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. We'll go on now to the public comment. This is a time when our guests, and that's all of you, can speak to the City Council on anything that's on your mind that's not on the agenda. If you notice that it's on the agenda, something that you want to talk about, which is right up here, save it for that part of the meeting. It'll be more helpful to us. We'll ask you to come forward. You get 3 minutes. Just give us your name and where you live. Do we have any takers tonight? School has started. We have some students here. I'm told you get extra credit if you speak to the City Council. Thank you for being here. No takers. We'll close that part of the meeting tonight. We'll now go on to the consent agenda. This is the part of the meeting where we pass a number of things that are rather kind of ordinary, sometimes mundane things that need to be passed and save us a little bit of time, most of the work. Did you have a comment?
Yeah.
Come forward, please.
Actually, she wanted to talk about the WIRA agreement.
Okay,
that's
so
why I wanted
okay.
to pull it off the consent.
Okay, we're going to pull it for you.
I'm going to pull it.
We're going to pull it so you can do that. Once, in about 15 minutes, we'll take it. Yeah, thank you, Peggy. Have a seat. We'll get back to you. We won't forget. So Councilmember Watson has requested that we pull the WIRA agreement off the consent, which all it takes is one council member to do that. So do I have a motion to adopt the rest of the consent agenda?
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the consent agenda minus WIRA. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. The modified consent agenda has been adopted. We now go into some fun stuff. Not that we're losing a valuable employee, but that we get to celebrate many years of wonderful and faithful service of Art Longstreth, and our public works director, his immediate supervisor, is going to lead us in that part of our evening. Kevin.
Good evening. Kevin Renz, public works director. As you all know, I started here back in November and came into the office, and I've got to say that one of the things that helped me to get into the job was having Art in the office. He is an absolute joy to be around, and an absolute wellspring of information. He has a wonderful knowledge of the city codes as well as what's installed in the ground. He's been with the city, or going to be with the city, for 25 years and has been a fantastic asset. It's been a pleasure to work with him. And I'm going to introduce Katie Ratter, our project manager, to come up and speak a little bit about Art.
So for those of you that have not met Art, he's kind of a big deal. And so we want to kind of keep this lighthearted. We'll get into the more serious stuff later. So in
Katie, I'm sorry. We have a number of guests that might not know who Art is. Art, you should stand up so the audience knows who we're talking about.
Hey, Art.
Thank you, Art. Thank you, Katie.
So I've worked with Art since 99, and just as kind of a way to get to know him in David Letterman style, I'm going to give you the top 10 reasons why Art is just the coolest. Number 10 is about in 1999 when Art started in City Hall. He worked for the maintenance department first. Red pencils. If you didn't invest in red pencils in about 1999, you should have. Art, I helped him out a lot with doing letters and that sort of thing, and we had this joke going that the less red pen or pencils that I used, the better off he was doing. So number 10 great thing about Art is the red pencils. Red pencils went on the rise again later when he started doing plan review, leading all over plans that developers would bring in. So number 9, Art is a fashion plate. He wears the same thing every day. Kind of scared us. One day he came in with a different colored shirt. It did not exactly match the color of his pants. We learned to cope. Number 8, Art is a closet inventor, if you're not aware of this. He was a little ahead of the curve about 8 years ago, you remember, where cell phones, you could not talk on your cell phone in your car. Somebody had mistakenly ordered wide rubber bands, and that's when you had the brick of a cell phone. He decided that you just take that rubber band, you strap that cell phone to your head, and you were good to go. Number seven, hugs. Art hates hugs. But that makes him cool. Number six, Art's always needed, like, reading glasses. And so one day I was out walking around, found a pair of reading glasses on the curb. It was a subdivision that he had recently inspected. I'm like, hey, Art, I found these glasses. He's like, great. These are awesome. He wore them for 2 years. They were not his. Number five, dandelion wine. Art picked some dandelions off of Church Road, made the best dandelion wine. So lucky to have some of that. Number four, Art's got a heck of a handshake, and the police chief isn't here, but those two try to, you know, trade grips, and I think one day Art was like, he hurt me. Number three, Art is kind of a softie. He's got a thing for noodle dogs. That's all I'm going to say about that. Number two, why Art is awesome. He has the best stories. Well, you've heard the term up to your neck and, you know, stuff. Literally, Art has a story about that. That was him. And number one reason why Art is awesome, 25 years of just doing a great job for the city.
Absolutely.
He has built some stuff, you know, just cajoled people into doing hard work. So thank you to Art. So next, Wendy LaRocque, she couldn't be here today, but she does these awesome slideshows, so we're going to ask that we play that in Art's honor.
And then we're going to give you a hug.
Yeah.
Love it.
Thank you.
No dogs were harmed.
Bo had a few things that he wanted to relay, but he's not here, so you'll have to envision a taller version of me speaking in Bo's voice. Basically, Bo wanted to let you know that on behalf of Public Works Maintenance, I would like to sincerely thank you, Art, for all the hard work and dedication you've put into your long career here. You have taken us through a great transition from the days of drive-by inspections to what our inspections are today and how thorough you are. Your fortitude to do it right while caring for the long-term maintenance of our infrastructure is a quality few may recognize, but we get it. You, Art, have always been willing to step up and take on whatever mission was asked of you, whether it was helping with a flood fight, working on snow removal, or even assisting a coworker with car problems. You have always been there to lend a hand. You have come a long way in your journey from a utility worker at the shop to a development inspector, then plan review, and now training your replacements. I am glad I was able to be a small part of it. Thanks for always putting us first and having our backs. I think Yori would like to say some stuff.
So, you know, we always talk about how public works and planning, you know, are kind of two opposite movements, and so you can imagine on your first day as a planner, you know, geeky little planner coming in, and you meet Art, who's probably one of the more intimidating presences that you can imagine, where here's a guy who has built stuff, who still builds stuff, and is now telling these other big guys how to do stuff. He's also using a lot of interesting and colorful language to make that happen, or combinations of words. You know, Art, if you've met him, has a unique ability to string together, you know, four and sometimes five-letter words in many sentences. And it's even this afternoon, there was pretty good. But while Art can be intimidating, he really does choose not to be. He's a consummate team player because he's extraordinarily patient. I can't think of a time when, even to this day, where he has not had a stack of paperwork in front of him and someone comes up to the front and he'll come up and he'll work through his lunch. He'll be there for an hour or more sometimes to make sure that that person understands. He's extremely generous, where he's given so much to the city that we really can't measure. In my 9 years working with him, I don't remember a time when he was not willing to, again, carefully go over the background on a project, sit with Haley or me or Ryan and talk about what happened way back when, was not willing to consider a new approach when that might be better. What is really kind of unique about Art is sometimes we'll all make calls that we know that the applicant will not like. And often, more often than not, that had to be Art that had to make those calls to defend the city. Art never hid. Art never went out the back door. He would always come up, even if he knew that the person up at the front counter had thought all night about it and knew exactly what he wanted to say, and Art only had 15 seconds to be ready, but he always came up. And because Art has always wanted to do what was right for the city, that meant staying late, working on weekends, even sometimes getting in a hole with an applicant when the applicant had no idea how to do it right, and Art did, and so darn it, Art would get in there and he would fix it for him. So by doing this, by just being Art, there's probably no individual in Ferndale's history that has saved our community more money or ensured that we had better, safer roads and utilities than Art. And so ultimately, you know, I started off talking about being intimidating. That may be what's most intimidating of all, is the idea that very soon we'll need to move forward without Art. So thank you.
Art. I heard about Art years before I ever had a three-second conversation. And there was an intimidation factor that I sort of came over me when I heard the name. Because people out in the field that were doing jobs
they knew that art had a very high standard. And they had to get the job done legally and right and correct and with the city's best interest at heart. And I sort of had this caricature of you. I thought, someday I'll probably meet this guy, you know, and he'll be sort of this tough, hard-nosed, hard-ass kind of guy. And you are one of the most gentle souls I've ever met. Humble and thoughtful and gracious, and it's very cool. Somewhere in my council years, I went on a bike ride with a city employee, pointing at your house. And I built a couple homes. I was so impressed with the meticulous type of work that you did. What you did in your house told me what you were like when you did your work. You were thoughtful, you were meticulous, everything had to just be just right. And I've never seen anybody so creative with concrete before. You are, some people it's oil, some people it's clay. Concrete is your medium, sure. So I have this written down here. Art is a credit to our city, and we are honored by his years of dedication. You cannot find a more humble, thoughtful, and reliable man. His diligence can be found in the bones of our city. His hard work and careful eye have protected the people of Ferndale in ways most will never know by making sure our streets, buildings, and facilities are built safely and securely. So, Art, would you come up? Here we have something else for you. I will read this because this is kind of cool. In appreciation of your service, it says up here, 25 years, and dedication throughout the years of the City of Ferndale, your dedication and commitment to excellence have inspired us and will be remembered for many years to come. You have set the standard, my friend. We wish you good health, happiness, and continued success in your retirement. And you live in Ferndale, and I trust you're going to continue to live in Ferndale. So congratulations. We really appreciate it. And this is yours.
All right, great.
And I think we got pictures here.
There you go.
Give him a hug.
Hug him.
Big old bear hug.
Our attorneys like it when we don't hug people.
Moving on, we've had the WIRA pulled from the consent agenda, and why don't you explain what WIRA is? That might be a good start, and maybe then we can transition to Councilman Watson. Would that be okay?
Yeah, that's kind of my trying to figure out where Ferndale fits in, and I know Peggy Appiano also had a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the WIRA, governments love acronyms, and WIRA stands for the Water Resource Inventory Area. It's Think of it as a watershed, but it's actually a little bit more than that. The state is divided up into WIRAs, and we happen to be a WIRA number one. And there's, I forget how many there are. And one of the purposes, one of the major purposes for these WIRAs is to group together watersheds in geographic areas, which allows, and it really was one of the foundations for salmon enhancement. And it's a watershed approach to salmon enhancement. And the legislature actually created the WIRAs. They created a group called the Planning Unit, which was supposed to be the grassroots, the well owners, the farmers, the tribe, everyone. And then there's management units, and it gets to be rather cumbersome because there is also the Puget Sound Partnership kind of sitting at the top of the organizational structure, along with the feds who provide money. So at the end of the day, what ends up happening is you have a local planning effort to identify what salmon species are at risk, why they're at risk, whether it's something, and something could be done. So one of the beneficial aspects of the WIRA process is it allows the feds to give money to the state, the Puget Sound Partnership, the states to then to disseminate the monies down to the WIRAs. And the WIRAs, we literally sit around once a year and rank and rate the various projects, be it woody debris in the streams or acquisition of properties along the river or what have you. So the WIRA process is intended to start at the bottom with citizen involvement, and then from the top comes money and expertise, and hopefully the nexus of those two areas allows you to have improvements that are tailored to the local WIRA? Because they're not all the same. I mean, Eastern Washington is drastically different than Western Washington. Our rivers here, the Nooksack, is different than the Skagit. So there needs to be some variation between them. But I know one of the frustrating, I've been involved now in the WIRA process now for, I think, 2 or 3 years. I'm the small city representative. So when the WIRA management board, or what's called the joint board, and there's other ones as well, normally you have the tribal representatives in the county, and Bellingham, and the PUD, and Fish and Wildlife, and the room gets kind of full. And so the small city caucus asked me to represent the other small cities. So I represent the interests of Blaine and Nooksack and Linden and everyone else, except for Bellingham. They're kind of they're big enough to have their own representation. So the WIRA process was set up, as I said, by the legislature following some federal mandates to try to look at a cohesive science-based approach to salmon enhancement. Unfortunately, it's not been as successful as I think those would have wished it could have been. The salmon enhancement is an extremely complex issue. It doesn't all happen in the rivers. A lot of it happens out in the oceans, and the whole confluence between the impact of humans versus the impact of nature. So it's unbelievably complex from an organizational standpoint because science is complex. And so what you have in front of you tonight is an interlocal agreement between many of the major players as to how the WIRA process is organized. It probably, and depending on who you talk to, it may have a small effect, it may have a large effect, but my understanding is that going back a number of years, the county earmarked some monies that went into the WIRA pot that allowed this local process to go forward. Over the years, those monies have slowly been used. And now it's getting to the point where the county, for a variety of reasons, is reticent in adding more money to the pot. So there was a need to reorganize the WIRA organization, which would allow anyone in that organization to look for funding. It would not have at its core a county and a sole county responsibility. So it kind of broadens the ability for funding for WIRA activities. It hopefully kind of simplifies, which is an understatement, because if you saw in your packet, hopefully in there it had the, at the very end, in fact it's the very last page, it shows some of the inner workings between these working groups, these citizen-initiated working groups, and then there's the WIRA management team, the WIRA Watershed Management Board, which is one of the new creatures that's being, right now there's something called a joint board, and that's going away to be replaced by this. And hopefully this graphic kind of shows you the interplay between the city councils, the county council, the tribal councils, the PUD, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife as kind of the overseers of the process. And then it kind of works its way down to more of the citizen groups. Over on the side, you can see that there's the planning unit. And the planning unit is something that has had a lot of difficulty, I think, finding its legs. It was a creature of the legislature. It was required. But I know at least here in this WIRA, there's been a lot of struggle about how the planning unit interacts with the other moving parts of the WIRA process. So this, I hope that this reorganization of this new interlocal is more than just rearranging the deck chairs. I hope it actually brings a little more streamlined activities to the WIRA, and I hope it opens up additional revenue sources. But at the end of the day, it really represents the efforts of a lot of people, a whole lot of people, hundreds and hundreds of people in this process of trying to recover these endangered and threatened fish stocks.
So, Council, of course, we're going to open up public comment, but any questions from the City Council first of staff?
Just one.
Yeah, Councilmember Watson.
So, do you sit on the Watershed Management Board representing the small cities or the WIRA Management Team?
Right now, I sit on the WIRA Management Team.
Okay.
And I'm a a partial member of the joint board. And if I wanted to, I could also take part in the planning unit. But right now, the planning unit small city representative is actually Mike Martin, the city administrator from Linden. So he's taken he's agreed to kind of be the small city representative for the planning unit, and then I'm the small city representative as you kind of work your way up the food chain.
See, Peggy had questions.
Yeah, are there any comments, questions from anyone? Ms. Lupiano? Would you like to come up? Yeah, come up to the microphone. Ashley, come up and introduce yourself and where you live and go at it. We'd love to hear from you.
Peggy Lupiano, I'm a citizen from Ferndale. And not obviously as well-versed in things here as Mr. Young, but my understanding was that essentially the citizens drove the process, that the idea behind all this was that, rather than being at lower down on the food chain, that we were supposed to be higher up on the food chain, as in the citizens' needs were what we're supposed to be directing this whole process, and that the joint board with Whatcom County as lead agency was supposed to support and facilitate the needs of the planning unit. My understanding was that the planning unit has had, some difficulties in getting together, but part of that has been because members have decided they just didn't want to play along anymore. And, the small cities kind of packed up and went too, was my understanding. I did not realize you had a replacement, but, I've been to a few meetings where it seems like not very many people showed up. I'm not a regular attendee, but, I'm somewhat aware of what goes on. In regard to, a small amount of money starting the process off, I remember going to a surface water work session meeting where Pete Kremen said that this was the state created this, and it was an unfunded mandate. Kind of hasn't been my impression because of the public records requests that I've made. I've seen lots of money funneled through for this, that, and the other project, managed by various entities. A lot of money. The idea of opening it up so that these various agencies can beat the bushes for more money, I think they're already doing that. What I've seen in just looking at the stuff that I've requested is a lot of waste. I'm a little concerned with this thing because I don't completely understand, as being kind of new to this, what the purpose of the Salmon Recovery Board was to begin with. Obviously the Salmon Recovery Act was, created these in order to improve salmon habitat and to enhance, fish populations on it. And supposedly that's what the Salmon Recovery Board is supposed to do. I couldn't understand why they would want to reorganize. I mean, this thing just kind of didn't make sense to me. And why Ferndale, it looks to me, in looking at this new agreement, that Ferndale kind of gets shuffled to a place that doesn't seem as favorable to me. I don't know. Maybe that's just my impression as a layperson, but it looks to me like they're going from sitting on a board where they actually have a say in things to something where they're a member of, a group that speaks through a chairperson, a co-chair, and doesn't have a direct input. Maybe my interpretation of that is wrong, and maybe he can clarify, but it doesn't look to me like a move in the right direction for the city of Ferndale. My other concern is that there's some vagueness here in terms of how these co-chairs, will be. It doesn't really say how the co-chairs will be selected. And it just says that the different, their operating procedures, the different caucuses will determine their own operating procedures, but it doesn't really spell out what those operating procedures are. And so, there's some vagueness here, and I kind of wonder, you know, if Ferndale really knows what it's getting itself into when it enters into agreements like that. I'm sure you must have run a past your city legal department, because I would imagine that any time you enter into, you know, an agreement, that you probably would want to, if it has, you know, impact on things as water and fish, you know, important things. As I said, I just have some concerns, because it doesn't strike me as necessarily a good move. I guess I want to know what's in it for Ferndale. You know, that bottom line, you know, how does Ferndale benefit through this restructuring?
City Administrator?
Sure.
Several questions in there.
We'll have to see how it all works out, but my belief is that this is not going to change very much as to what's happening. Ferndale will still be involved, because the small cities do have a seat at the table, and the group operates under consensus, and what that really means is it's not 10 people in the room, 6 people say yes, 4 people say no. It's 10 people in the room and 10 people say yes. It can be a harder way to do things, because literally one group or one person can cause issues. But this is supposed to be a collaborative effort. The planning unit, which is the by legislative intent, was supposed to bring in was going to be the grassroots. And if you listen to Kelly Linville, who I think helped author some of this, her belief was that, yes, it would flow up from the planning unit to inform the decisions as you go up the food chain. In reality, not all of the parties that are further up in the decision matrix, most notably the tribes, do not take part in the planning unit. So there was, I think from the inception, there was somewhat of a disconnect between the legislative intent of having all interest groups, big or small, be in the planning unit and kind of feed the information upwards, from the standpoint of who actually took part in that grassroots effort. And I do know that the planning unit has, the county has struggled with the planning unit. And at one point, the county wanted to actually disband the planning unit, just stop it meeting. And that could not happen because, again, it's a legislative direction. So then they had to figure out, and this is something that they've been tussling with, what is the role for the planning unit? You know, are they simply, and perhaps a overused word, but are they an advisory committee to the county council, or are they truly where everything is supposed to originate and then it goes up the ladder? According to this, and the role that everyone, at least in the joint board and the management team, they believe that the proper use of the planning unit as an advisory unit to the county council, because if there's one thing, the county is supposed to represent all of those other interests, represent all of the agricultural interests, the private well owners, the fish, the recreational fishing. The county, the thought was, is that the county has this overarching geographic charge. And even though you might have the city here and the PUD over there and Bellingham here, the county is everywhere. And so it's been a little hard to try to figure out what the appropriate role for the planning unit is. And I know there's been a lot of frustration on the planning unit because they just don't seem to have a meaningful role. And I know that's been tough on everyone. But I think Ferndale will continue to be represented. I don't think this is the end all. I don't think once this is done, all of a sudden we're going to, you know, go out and save the salmon. This is a lot of process, and it's probably more process than it really is form. Some of the names are going to be changing of these groups, but it's going to be the same people at the table. And I do know that this has taken months and probably a few years. In fact, one of the reasons you might not this is the second time we've talked about the WIRA interlocal, probably in the last year. The reason being is in the last year, the legal folks started weighing in up till last week. In fact, there was a newest version last week because Fish and Wildlife's attorneys came back and said, change these three words and change those four words. But again, it's consensus. So everyone at the table, which is predominantly, as you work your way up, it really is, it's the county, it's the PUD, Fish and Wildlife, and the tribes and Bellingham. Those are the biggest players at this whole thing. And it's taken a while for everyone to feel like this change is acceptable. And again, I think the biggest change is the county did not want to be the sole source for funding the operations of the WIRA process. And they were by default. They put, I think, over $1 million into an account, and that's been slowly worked down. And I think the county has gotten to the point where it's my understanding that they did not want to continue the structure because they did not want to continue to be the sole funding source for it. So, again, if you ever come to some of these meetings, I tend to be the curmudgeon over in the corner that says, when are we going to start talking? When are we going to start doing? I've been an advocate for simply, why are we meeting for 3 hours? Why don't we just give the money to the tribes? They know what they're doing. Let them do it. So it's strange because there are times when I and the tribes are speaking the same language. There are times we don't. And there are times when the PUD is on my side or not on my side, so to speak, as to venting frustration over this. But this is so darn important. That we need to do something different because what we've been doing, there's no more salmon in the river than there was 10 years ago. In fact, some places there's less. So if this is just form over function, well, we've had form over function for a decade or more. At least I've been around.
Ask some questions.
It is important. And to me, it seems like the legislatures, both the county council and the city councils, are not really well-versed and what goes on. I think if you're going to make decisions regarding such important resources as water and fish, that there needs to be a real good understanding of what's going on. Additionally, a lot of money's been coming in, from other sources than the county, that the county apparently has not really even looked at. And that's, I understand if we need money from outside sources to fund some of these projects. Nonetheless, it seems to me that the council should still be kept in the loop as to how, what money's coming in, how it's being spent and whatnot. I mean, that seems only proper. I mean, outside money might come with an outside agenda. It may not necessarily serve local goals, and that's a concern. In my opinion.
Well, we don't.
The other question I have is it makes it sound like the tribes were not involved with the planning unit for the meeting. My understanding was that, and maybe I misunderstood, but I thought that the tribes did have representation on the planning unit at the get-go, but then decided not to continue.
Could very well be, yeah. Predates my involvement.
So, isn't an issue of non-inclusiveness, it's an issue of there was a rift of some sort and they decided it wasn't worth their while. Now, in looking at the structure of these things, it makes it sound like the planning unit is really irrelevant. I know from certain members of the planning unit that they feel like they've been kept in the dark on certain processes that go on with the joint board. And, not an issue of the planning unit isn't functioning. To my point of view, it's an issue of the planning unit has not been properly supported. That the entities that were in charge of facilitating and supporting the planning unit, kind of shirked that responsibility. That's my view. Aside from that, if the planning unit is irrelevant and the joint board and the salmon recovery board combined into this new thing, is the decision maker, then there's a lot of people being left out. I mean, where are the water associations and the private well owners and the irrigation districts in this process? Where are they? I mean, they're mushroom people kept in the dark and fed shit. It's not cool. That doesn't seem to match up with the intent of the Watershed Management Act. And so, those are my concerns, and that's why you know, I'm speaking here today.
So. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mason.
Yeah, all of her concerns I've heard for the past 4 or 5 years or what have you like that, they are valid. They really are, because it is hard when you are a well owner or you're a farmer and your only input is to the planning unit, and then the planning unit is simply advisory, and then it starts working its way up the chain, and their representation isn't there. It is frustrating. And as far as the funding, one of the things that drives me crazy is that it's now kind of a top-down from the Puget Sound Partnership. If we want their money, which is where the big money comes from, you got to play the game and form all the committees, and it is mind-numbing how these unbelievably intelligent biologists can make things so darn complicated. But their hearts are in the right place. They want everyone across the state to be doing the same thing, or at least using the same language and trying to achieve the same goals. And so that's why some of these WIRAs are being reorganized to fit into the ecosystem. There's human wellness indicators that are statewide, and there's a bunch of other things too, that they're trying to get all the WIRAs to kind of row in the same direction. So when someone asks Washington State, what is the state doing, the Puget Sound Partnership can say, we're all speaking the same language, we're trying to address the same indicators, be it in the near shore or the riparian zones, or it is so complex that with that complexity comes complexity. You can't eliminate it. And this is probably one of the most frustrating, but I hope eventually rewarding things that I've done since here, because I know these people and I know that they want to do well, but I also know that sometimes one person's interests do not align with other people's interests, and I share her frustration over the lack of true decision making that the planning unit represents. But again, I think the legislative intent was to have a very widespread, diverse, perhaps in some ways less than totally functional grassroots that represents all the way down to the individual landowner. And you can't get 80,000 people to agree on anything, especially when they're talking about, you know, their well or their berry fields or their fishing or whatever it might be. And so it's a highly regulated, unbelievably complex, laden with technical jargon that will drive you numb. But I think this is not gonna hurt. And at the end of the day, it's the consensus of everyone who's been working on this that it could indeed make it a little bit better. But this is not going to solve anything.
So, City Administrator Young, the tribes are being asked to sign this interlocal, the cities,
yes.
The CUDs.
Yes.
Council's looking for some direction as well.
Yeah,
what's the downside of, we're not going to do this today?
If any one of the 12 partners in this does not sign it, it's dead. We just continue with the same boards and advisory committees and the local integrating organization, and there's all these ad hoc groups, there's science work groups. So we'll just continue to flounder. Maybe we will, even if we pass it. But we'll go back to what we were doing before, which I think, if anyone can agree to, hasn't been a rousing success.
But this is an attempt at an improvement.
This is an attempt. It is an honest attempt by, believe me, a lot of disparate interests who really can't agree on many things someday. But they've agreed that this is a step that they want to take.
Questions, Council? Councilmember Watson.
So I'm assuming, are these meetings open to the public?
Yes.
Okay, so yes. Would you just let Council know when you're going to go, and that way if we want to go to kind of... I appreciate that you're trying to make it better. I'm just still confused over what you're trying to do. I mean, are you just looking for grants? You're not developing regulations or anything like that. You're looking for projects and grant money to try and make things better. You're not developing regulations for well users or that sort of thing.
True. Okay. It's probably 95% chasing money.
Okay. So if you could just let us know, I think I can support it just to give you a chance to try and make it better. But I would like to know more about what you're doing. I'd like to go to a few meetings, basically.
Yeah, it'd be interesting because the planning unit is, again, the grassroots. It's probably the liveliest.
Okay.
When you start working your way up the various boards that I sit on, it becomes the group gets smaller, mm-hmm. and we end up one group hashes out issues and then suggests a solution to the next group, who takes that recommendation and maybe accepts it and then sends it to the next group. So as you start working your way up, the fun part each year is the is actually looking at the in-stream projects. They actually go on field trips out and they traipse around in the water and talk about the large woody debris and the riffles and all the other things that fish biologists get excited about.
Not to interrupt, but I mean, but I'm going to because it's getting late. I am concerned that the groups can determine their own operating procedures. And was that just a matter of you talked for 9 months and that's the best you could come up with? Was y'all just figure it out?
Right. Yeah. We figured they're in the best position to figure out how they want to operate.
Okay.
Rather than kind of from the top, kind of, you know.
So I'm not sure. There may have been others from the audience that wanted to participate on the WIRA discussion.
All right. Roberta WIRA before tonight.
Come on forward and introduce yourself and make your comments, sir.
I'm Connor McClory. I'm one of the students here. And this whole WIRA thing, I think it's an interesting idea. And I agree with your stance. Why don't we just do it? But I do have one concern. What about the kids? I mean, in just a couple years, I'll be 18. I'll be an adult. What'll it be like then? What effect will this have on the future? What will happen to Joe Jimmy John in senior year of high school who is about to go out into the world? What about him? Is he going to be affected by this choice? I'm just kind of concerned that way.
Good question.
And I would say yes. The answer to that is yes. It really is. I think everyone agrees that bringing back and having abundant salmon for both recreational as well as tribal fisheries is a laudable goal. But we this is a hard thing because you can't keep building homes. You can't keep mowing down trees and expect the salmon to come back on their own. We can't keep dumping crap out in the ocean. And, you know, global warming is already changing the salmon. I mean, a lot of this is bigger than what we can do in Whatcom County. But you can only do your small part. It may mean that in the future we do things differently than what we do. It could be that in the future you don't see agricultural fields going down and touching the rivers. Some of the projects that I really prefer each year when we go through our grant process are the acquisition projects, when they actually buy a section of riverfront so it can't be developed. It's hard. It really is because, you know, I'm a city administrator. I'm supposed to help you guys guide a growing city. But then the other side of me says, by God, we can't grow. Nothing grows forever. At some point, imagine Ferndale with 100,000 people, a million people. Your great-great-great-grandchildren may see it.
But
or it may
be
some
dead
post-apocalyptic hellhole.
I don't know.
So,
is it really your only question before that's
the
end?
Yeah,
so
no.
Doesn't go down.
Change, we're going to need to make change if we expect the outcome to divert from where we're seeing it go now. And those choices are hard when people's lives depend on agriculture and fishing and forestry and all those things. How do you tell someone that, you know, what they want to do with their life or what their parents did for their life has to change? It is hard. Get involved. Really get involved. That's the only thing that makes change happen is involvement of folks like yourself. So, you know.
There you go.
You gotta get into the game. Otherwise, you just get to watch from the sidelines.
Yeah.
While you're up here, anything else?
Just a quick comment. My original question was going to be about the tourists, but then I realized tourists aren't going to be affected by this anytime soon. They'll just walk in and say, hey, look, salmon.
Thank you for coming today.
Also, I believe it will have a good effect on the fish people called salmon. Salmon rights.
Thank you. Any other folks from the audience? Seeing none. City Council, what is your pleasure this evening? Councilmember Hansen.
I move that we accept the WIRA interlocal agreement.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilmember Hansen and seconded by Councilmember Olson to adopt the interlocal. More discussion from Council. All in favor of adopting the interlocal, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. It has passed 6-0, the interlocal on WIRA.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
I'll let you know when the next.
I appreciate that. I really want to talk to you.
I'll let you know when the next planning. Mr. Martin attends the planning unit, so I'm not aware of when their meetings are, but I do know that the next WIRA management meeting is October 12th. If you have 2 to 4 hours.
Time?
10 o'clock.
Place?
It's in the garden room, which is the basement of where the county stormwater office is.
It used to be His Honors Restaurant and sort of the charter review. Okay.
On Grant? You mean the big building on Grant?
It's not the main county building. There's the main county building, and then there's the library.
Mm-hmm.
And then moving over there, there's like a six-story or so.
Yeah, where the emergency management used to be.
Yes.
Okay.
It's in the bottom floor. There's actually a meeting room in the bottom
floor. So you are having super-secret meetings and super-secret basements.
Okay, City Council, I think we're ready to move on. As you know, the Chinese have the year of the cat and the dog and everything else. This may be the year of the restroom for Ferndale next year, as I'm counting three possible restrooms. So we're going to start with the Pioneer Park restroom restoration. Well, that's like a reunion band or something like
it's
that.
It's exciting.
It is.
I'm trying to make sure that should we devolve into a post-apocalyptic bubble, we have bathrooms.
Have that bathroom. For the seven.
I've been before you on multiple occasions talking about the restrooms. One of the ones that came up during the discussions in the past was the restroom that's located at Pioneer Park. Restrooms seem to be in poor shape. Council had requested that we come up with a list of recommended upgrades to the facility to look at improving the customer experience going to Pioneer Park. We took this to committees where we discussed some potential upgrades. Committees was able to take the list of upgrades that were proposed and then kind of put those into a list of the ones that we should do, the ones that we could do, and the ones that we probably didn't need to do. Listed in the order here, we've got some upgrades, including lighting, painting, new roof, sinks, faucets, mirrors, trash receptacles, towel dispensers, soap dispensers, for a total of about $10,300. And then moving down to the should-do list, we've got a couple of that involve the urinals in the men's restroom and dividers there rather than the current configuration of the men's. And then a couple of items that were the dividers between the stalls in the bathroom that were seen as not needing to be done, as well as the doors in the facility not needing to be replaced. So kind of just looking for some further input. I met with Greg and talked about some potential funding. Greg had identified that we do have revenues available in the Park Mitigation Fund to be able to support the expenditure. So, dependent on the council's pleasure, we could proceed forward with the upgrades to the facility to do the must-have items for $10,000 or for an additional $6,300. We could proceed forward with the could-view items.
City Council,
any combination.
Questions, discussion. Councilmember Watson.
Do we have any LTAC money you think that we could use? Can we use LTAC money for this?
No.
No,
we currently have, I think it's 46 or 49,000. I think it's 46,000 budgeted for the field house restroom out of the park mitigation funds, and it appears that all we're going to be doing this year is tearing it down, and so we certainly have the budget within the park mitigation fund to do this.
Okay, what are you just going to do the must-dos then?
That's the question for all of you.
If you would like us to proceed forward with the should-do items, I know during the committees there was some discussion of, you know, do we keep it the more rustic?
We're not going to have that discussion.
We're not going to have that discussion right now. I mean, you could, but...
That's not.
Looking for some direction from council.
I'll make a motion to approve Agenda Bill 1609-007.
Is that the must-do?
For just must-do?
For what dollar?
Yeah, you need to specify. For all the must-dos. Let's approve all the must-dos.
The 10-3.
I'll second that.
So moved by Councilmember Taylor and seconded by Councilmember Watson to adopt the improvements or restoration of the Pioneer Park bathroom behind the Telecom House with just the must-dos at about $10,300. Discussion, Council. Seeing none, you ready for the question? All in favor of adopting the proposed improvements for $10,300, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. It has passed 6-0, and we'll have a restored bathroom. That's one down.
And just to reiterate the staff report a little bit, the work's going to be completed by the Public Works crews. It'll be completed over the wintertime when the bathroom's not in use, and so we should go into the season, next year, with an upgraded bathroom facility. The other ones that are kind of in the pipeline, we should be getting the demolition permit for the field house, as Greg indicated. So we'll be taking that down this year and then positioning ourselves to be able to do something at that location. And we're currently doing the design for the improvements at the Star Park location. So we'll bring that back.
And so our guests know what we're talking about here. We have a field house. It looks like a house by the baseball fields that will likely someday soon be a restaurant. And also adjacent to Star Park, probably, as well as we're working on funding for those ideas.
Yeah. Right. So some needed improvements for the park.
Well needed. Very good. Well done, staff. Thank you, council. Going on now to adopting a street vacation policy. And I trust this is not about streets taking vacation, but our community development director, Yuri Burnett, is going to walk us through this ordinance.
Yes. So we talked about this earlier this year. Then again at committee, periodically the city receives requests to vacate or give up its right-of-way, streets, roads, utility corridors. We have not had a policy to guide us in the past, and as a result, we've had decisions that have kind of varied depending on, in some cases, how the wind is blowing. So council, in response to an earlier request this year, asked staff to put together some policies. We did, based on other jurisdictions. They are fairly straightforward, with the bottom line being that the city's basic policy is that we will not give up streets unless there is a good public benefit, and that if we are to give up streets that we own, that there will be some financial compensation for it. So we've reflected council's decision to show a little bit more of the history. Why are we doing this in the ordinance? We also renumbered it to reflect the actual chapter. So I'm happy to answer any questions you
council.
Might have.
Council Member Birch and then Council Member Taylor.
Well, it was brought up. There's a sentence in the documentation that's not finished. I was just wondering, did you make any changes to what was at committee meetings for the next day when we got our packet? Is there any changes?
Not to the staff report, but to the actual chapter itself. We did renumber it, as you might remember. Initially, I think it had chapter 12.16, and the first parts in blue did not reflect what was actually in the chapter at the very top. So we changed that. Doesn't change any of the text, just the renumbering. And then we, I think, D in 12.36.020 added, it is the purpose of this chapter to address the fact that the city of Ferndale has not historically followed a consistent process or criteria for reviewing vacation requests. The lack of a consistent process has in some cases resulted in decisions related to vacation requests that did not serve the long-term interests of the city.
And you said that in here that you wanted to hurry and get this done because we may not do it at a later date or it'd be postponed. What did you mean by that?
Was that in the staff report? It was. I'm looking to see the context. It was.
Conclusions.
In the conclusions?
Yeah.
But maybe delayed if necessary to a future council meeting. So there really is no hurry in adopting it. If there is, was that the point that you were looking at?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is no hurry in adopting it at this point. It was, we wanted to follow up as rapidly as possible on the vacation request that was made before, because there will be other vacation requests again, you know,
right,
and who knows
right.
from where.
And when I suggested we have an application form, fill in the blanks, and the fees associated to the application itself and the appraisal and everything laid out, did you write down blah, 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 blah?
No. No, we are still working on that, and I actually directed my staff this morning to, you know, to have a clear deadline for establishing those applications.
I've got a great, I found a really great application online, too.
And that's perfect, because that's exactly what staff is looking for, where they say, Yori, thank you so much for telling me that I need to have it done, but tell me what the contents should be. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Councilmember. Councilmember Taylor.
I was just going to ask, how many road vacancies have we had in the last year?
Zero.
How many in the last 5 years?
I think there was one close to
three. Well, I know in 100 years we've had eight.
So I'm just kind of curious to know what kind of drove you to come up with this.
Because council requested it. And so that we did not need to, if and when we get a new council, to introduce a subject that sounds, you know, fairly foreign to them, and to provide more context of, these are tough decisions you need to make, believe us, and have a council say, let's wait, to be able to put something in place with a council that understands the difficulties.
Okay, so this ordinance gives the council authority to take action on road vacancy. But that when we had an applicant come before our council before, there was no decision made. Will this help clarify that decision-making process so that...
Well, the decision just here recently was to not vacate.
Well, there was actually no action taken by
the
council.
Which is...
That is action.
It is action. It's one of those non-action actions.
Right.
And I think I sent out a copy of the letter that the mayor had sent to the tribal chairman, hopefully clarifying that, because it may have been a little confusing, because there, like you say, there was no motion, there was no second. But by that inaction, the action of the council was to not vacate. But the purpose of this is to, and I think Yori feels similar to this, we felt that when you were asked to vacate, you had that, you know that you needed to move in some direction, but you didn't have any criteria, maybe that's the word I'm looking for. You know, what would make a good street vacation? What set of circumstances would make sense? What set of circumstances would not? And for better or worse, we borrowed from other municipalities what their criteria and process is. And so when we were all done with that, again, because as Yori mentioned, because the council asked, and I think you did not want to place yourselves or a future council in that situation of, again, being asked to do something and then also having to consider the criteria at the same time you're considering the request. It's almost like, as we talked about earlier tonight with the budget, it's better to talk about revenues before you talk about expenditures, because once you settle on revenues, then you have context to really consider your expenditure. So in this case, in the next, I don't know when, but in the next 100 years, when every so often there's a street vacation request, at least future councils will have your thoughts as to what appropriate criteria for judging the worthiness of dispensing with public property. So we're trying to, as you said, we did it because you asked, and I think it was a good ask, because we didn't have any standards before.
And council, you know this anyway, but it was council non-decision on COPO. It comes across a little bit clumsy. Council had a couple choices there. The first choice is what it did. Nobody made a motion, and that communicates a decision. A council member could have made a motion, might have gotten seconded, and then it would have been voted upon. The person that made the motion could still have voted no. It could have gotten there either way. It came across a little bit clumsy and it was confusing to others, and I hope that we clarified it. It's a little news, but even going back to Cope Road, you know, there are alternatives for people than just vacating the road. They can lease roads. You can even change the location. There's lots of things that can be done without the city necessarily vacating the road.
Well, Mr. Burnett. And I want to make sure that we don't, because I didn't, when I was going through here, I tried not to think of Cope Road. I thought more several years ago, you might remember, there was some talk amongst council to possibly vacate all of our alleys. Remember, over by the Riverwalk, there was talk about that, and then also between Sterling and Hamlin and Sterling, there was also another one, and where that would have made sense, the argument went, because we would have fewer roads to maintain. Just the other day, Chihuahuas, which owns Babes, was talking about vacating that alley. And I thought, gosh, that could have made a lot of sense in groupthink, but that this is supposed to compel staff and the council away from the groupthink of this is a great idea, we can save money in the depths of recession or whatever our context is, to say, let's step back and determine, is there a public benefit by answering these questions? And so that was the context through which I wanted to write this. Instead of Cope Road, it was forget Cope Road, let's talk about Higgins and all the other ones, and then game plan it to see, all right, could some viable vacation requests that had been approved in the past still be approved, or does this just close the door on all vacation requests? And I think it comes where you ultimately get to make a decision.
Well said. Council. Councilmember Watson, then Councilmember Birch.
In section 0.060, the appraisals, in section B, the public works director shall do appraisals based on the highest and best use. It's in quotes. Do you think that's something that everyone will understand what that means?
Well, Rebecca could probably talk to that more intelligently, but so I believe it is an industry term.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So is that a legal phrase? And if someone had a question, we could tell them the highest and best use means that,
right.
Yeah, it's just an open field right now, but, you know, because it's right next to the river, it's going to be worth more now than... Okay.
Right, right, right.
Okay.
Or essentially, if you're trying to, you know, appraise it as residential property, let's say, commercially zoned.
Okay.
Or it's just a road next to an industrial area that is prime for development. So is it valued as industrial land, or is it valued as a road?
Okay.
Yeah.
Councilmember Birch, I think.
Yeah, I for one was one who suggested we make an application process, because just reading somebody's letter that they submit to the city of Ferndale was clearly not enough information for us to make a wise decision. So
thank you.
This is a great start.
Councilman Wilson.
I'd like to move Agenda Bill 1609-008 for approval.
It's been moved by Councilmember Olson and seconded by Councilmember Hansen to adopt Agenda Bill 008 on the vacation of roadway right-of-way policies. More discussion from the City Council. Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All in favor of adopting the ordinance, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. It's passed 6-0, the adoption of the city right-of-way vacation policies. Thank you, Mr. Burnett.
Thank you, City Council.
Let's see, looking at my play card here, Mayor reports, I have two items. One, we met our new police officer this morning. I can't remember her name now. But
Myra.
Say it again, please.
Myra.
Myra. She speaks fluent Russian. Not that that would ever have any bearing on the city of Ferndale, but we'll bring her to council when she's ready to do that. Appreciate that. Also, I got a letter from the Department of Ecology this last week. I get lots of letters. This is a fun one. Congratulations, the Ferndale Wastewater Treatment Plant is receiving the 2015 Wastewater Treatment Plant Outstanding Performance Award. And they only give this to barely a third of the wastewater treatment plants statewide because of its compliance. Staff, the Department of Ecology staff, evaluated wastewater treatment plants in Washington for compliance with the effluent limits, monitoring and reporting requirements, spill prevention, planning, pretreatment, and overall operational demands of the NPDES permit. It takes diligent operators and a strong management team
working effectively together to achieve this high level of compliance. It is not easy to operate a wastewater treatment plant 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, without violations. The Washington State Department of Ecology appreciates the extraordinary effort your plant operators demonstrated throughout 2015. Talented and proficient operators are critical to successful plant operations and protecting the health of Washington's waters. This is the fourth consecutive year the Ferndale Wastewater Treatment Plant has received this award. Your excellent record is a credit to the dedicated operators who are responsible for operating this award-winning plant. And I want to welcome tonight our chief operator of a great staff, Mike Olinger. You are still here. Why don't you stand up and let us congratulate you this evening. Thank you, Mike. Council reports. Councilmember Watson.
Community meal this Saturday from 10 to noon at the United Church. Everyone welcome.
Everybody should attend. It's a lot of fun. Any other councilmember? Councilmember Taylor.
Ferndale Chamber lunch Wednesday at noon. That's at the Silver Lake Casino.
Very good. Okay. Staff reports. Community Development Director Burnett. Public Works Director Rent. Our new Finance Director Circa Salmonen.
I've been here for 11 hours. You'll have 11 hours.
Welcome. There you go. We're very glad that you're here. Thank you for sharing our staff. Appreciate that. City Minister Young.
One thing, as you're aware, we're doing the project in Washington Street, and Katie Ratter was down there, and she became aware. If you remember, we bought the house on the corner of Washington and Vista, and we've since taken it off the site. The house next to it, as you go down Washington, is actually for sale. And Public Works Director is going to be verifying with our traffic engineers, but a few years ago when we had talked, we had asked them to look at Washington and at the two sections of Washington right there on Vista where they're misaligned, if we could, what we would need to do to perhaps in the future build a roundabout there. And if my memory serves me correctly, they said that we needed to buy not only the house in the corner that we did buy, but also that next house, which would allow us to kind of swing Washington to the north so it aligns with the Washington on the other side of the street and build somewhat of a conventional roundabout. So we're going to verify that geometry still is necessary. I talked to the realtor today, and if you're a realtor, who doesn't want to get a phone call from the city administrator inquiring about the sale of the property? If we are interested in it, and this is my question to you, the first step is, by law, if we are to buy real estate, we have to have an appraisal. We cannot buy property without an appraisal. So the first step, before we even get into how much and whether we should, would be to actually go out. It's about $500 for an appraisal. And I wanted to know, just kind of on consensus, if you will, if you would feel comfortable with us ordering up an appraisal and at least starting down that road of potentially buying that piece of property for a future road.
Council, that seems like a prudent move. Is there a general consent that we go ahead with the appraisal?
Sure.
Yeah, it doesn't obligate us to anything. It just kind of gets us in line, if you will.
Thank you, Greg.
Were you going to give us the other update, or you want to wait for another time?
Yeah, I wasn't able to speak to our city attorney today, so I think we're probably going to need to hold off.
That works.
Our communications officer, Riley Sweeney, and our city clerk,
Susan Duncan. Be watching your email in the next few days. The Health and Wellness Committee will be launching our newest our fall campaign, which is Walktober. And as always, council members are encouraged to join us in that. We do get points for that from AWC for having elected officials participate.
I think that's the full meal deal tonight. Do I have a motion from council to adjourn?
So moved.
And moved and seconded to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Good night, council.